much to share her experience, strength, and hope. We have Zoe.
Hi, I'm Zoe. I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I've ever qualified into a microphone before, so okay. Thank you so much, Carlos, for asking me to speak. I'm really nervous, just self-centered fear shit. Sorry, cursing. But I'm very grateful to be sober, and I guess I'll just try to carry the message of AA more so than my message. So I'll talk a little about how it was. First of all, I have 25 minutes, apparently, so that's a long time to talk about sobriety. But also, when I came in, I could not understand when people would talk about the solution. I had no idea what they were talking about. And it just seemed like this kind of, like, fantasy world. And what I related to was people's stories and their using. And that's what kept me coming back. So I'm not going to dwell on it too long, but I'll talk a little bit about it. So I grew up here in New York, and I believe personally that I was an alcoholic from the second I was born. As a kid, it was just like more, all the time. My first word was more. It was unco in French, which means more. And literally just like everything. And I, you know, it was a lot of just obsessive behaviors. And my parents from a very early age told me that I was most likely an alcoholic and had to be careful. There's a lot of alcoholism in my family. Active and sobriety. I mean, not that one aunt is sober, but kind of not. It's unclear. So, yeah, I started drinking I don't have, like, a first drink story. My dad's Belgian, and it's very, he drinks a lot. I don't know if he's an alcoholic. I don't really care. It's not my business. But there's a lot of drinking, and, like, it was very much, like, he would insist that I would have glasses of his wine or whatever from a very early age, and I hated it. I hated the taste. And I remember at some point when I was like 5 or 6, I like realized that like people drank to have a good time. Like my parents would throw a lot of parties and everyone would be drinking and smoking weed and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, like that's why people drink this stuff, is so they can like function normally. Because I was just insecure and awkward and just felt like, you know, everyone knew how to kind of go through this world and I didn't. And you hear it all the time when people qualify. But that's really how I felt. Like, I was, like, missing some fundamental part of life that everyone else knew. And I was like, oh, like, this substance is what people use to, like, live in the world. So I started drinking really early. And I was not a good drinker. I used to say I would drink and then I'd fall asleep. But what it was is I would just drink until I passed out from really early on. And so then I found cocaine when I was 14. And that sped up my downfall right away. It was like all the time, and it was very unmanageable from the beginning. But I'm a huge perfectionist, and I kept it together very well on like the outside. My family is very kind of, you know, like you hear a lot, like no one talks about feeling. I mean, a little more now, but growing up, it was like no one talked about feelings of like sadness or anger. It was just like happy all the time. Like, I have met, like, my mom would be, like, screaming at my dad, like, violent fights, and then the phone would ring, and it would be like, hey, yes, hello, you know, like, it was just, like, totally, like, just not living in reality. And I had a lot of anger about that to my parents, because I felt like they kind of lived in this, like, fantasy world, and kind of, like, everything is rainbow and sunshines all the time, and then kind of the world is not like that, and I, you know, was depressed from an early age, and it was just like I had a lot of anger. But I also, you know, was a huge overachiever at school. That was kind of like the thing I could use to say that everything was okay. Like, as long as I was getting good grades, I could do whatever I wanted. And we didn't really have any rules or anything, and it just kind of escalated really quickly. I remember like a couple months after I started doing drugs. So a couple months after I started doing like hard drugs, my parents were getting really suspicious because I was, you know, like 80 pounds and like purple and green and just my nose is running all the time. And I told them I had allergies because it was spring, and they sent me to this ear, nose, and throat doctor. And the appointment was at, I think, like 1 p.m. or something. It's my, I don't know, but like 2 p.m. or something. And I remember being like, okay, like I really shouldn't do Coke today because I'm going to like go to this doctor and he's going to look at my nose. And it was like 8 a.m. or something. I think I had school that day. And I was with my friend and I was like, well, you know, if I do some now, like by then it'll be okay. And that basically just got kept getting pushed up until the doctor's appointment where I was doing Coke in the office and like unmanageable, powerless right there. You know what I mean? Like I'd literally been doing drugs for like, I don't know, like 5 months or something. And it was already, I was completely powerless over not doing it. And so I go to the doctor and he like looks at my nose and he was like, so, you know, do you want your mom to leave the room? She doesn't have to be in here. And me, like living in this world of delusion, I'm like, oh, it's fine. Like I have nothing to hide. Like she can stay. And like just completely delusion. And he's like, well, you know, it looks like your nose has been burned by something. And I was like, yeah, you know, like last night I was at my friend's house and I was like drunk on the bed and I rolled over and I hit my nose and then I put like saline salt and stuff. So I think it burned it. And he's like, no, like it looks like cocaine and you have like a hole in your nose. And, you know, and then my mom kind of looked at me and then I was like, oh my God, you know, that's so crazy. That's so weird. You know, like, oh, like look at the time. I have to go. Like I'm late. And I left the office. I didn't come home for like 4 days. And I came, and I'd been getting drug tested and stuff. And like, I think I got caught once with a drug test. And I called my mom hysterically crying from like the park where I was doing coke. Yeah, like being like, I tried it once, and somehow you knew and tested me the next day. Like, you know, whatever. And it was just like retarded. And anyway, so I got home, and my mom was like hysterical, and there was like rehab pamphlets all around, and my dad like was like, look what you're doing to your mother, like, you know, like hit me, like it was just like really bad. And that was the end of freshman year of high school, and I convinced them that it was a phase and that it was the people I was hanging out with and I was fine and I'd be fine. And instead of sending me to rehab, they sent me to Italy to learn Italian for a month, and where I didn't have coke for a month. And it was the only month until I got sober that I didn't have coke, and I was so drunk the entire time that basically everyone ended up hating me. I would like pass out on the streets, and it was ridiculous. And when I got sober and I was kind of like, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm a cokehead, they were like, really, like think about that a little. And then I remember times like that when it was like, you know, it all started with the drink. And anyway, I mean, it just kind of continued like that. I got a lot more into pills because the drugs weren't really working. A lot of like benzos and codeine and stuff like that. And then Adderall was a big part of my story because I was getting straight A's. I was like AP classes, like national merit and whatever. And it was kind of like all fueling my ego. It was like, I can do everything. Like work hard, play hard. Like I'm crazy. Like I can, you know, do all this crazy shit. And like just all ego. And I would take Adderall so I wouldn't do coke and, you know, whatever. And it was kind of like this constant struggle for me of trying to quit. And I would like count days. I found all these journals recently of like, you know, like a couple years before I got sober. And it's like, you know, 22 days off of coke, or like 22 days clean. And then it was like 12 days, like not talking to this guy who was like bad for me or whatever. And, but then like while I was writing these journals, I was on like pills and drinking and smoking pot, but I said like 23 days sober, you know, like that was what sobriety was for me. And yeah, I mean, it just got messier, got worse. You know, I put myself in a lot of really dangerous situations that I'm sure you've all been there. I don't really need to go into it. And it just got really dark. It was like I was trying so hard to keep everything together and keep up this double life, and it was just completely unmanageable and so painful. And like I was constantly trying to pretend like everything was okay, and it would kind of peek through at times, especially when I was like coming down at like 11 a.m. in Brooklyn or something. I'd be talking to someone and I'd be like, you know, like I don't think I can do this anymore. Like this keeps happening. I keep saying I'm not going to go out, and then I like find myself and it's 2 days later and I don't know what to do, and I think I need to go to rehab. And and whoever I was with would be like, no, like it's fun, like you're Zoe, like work hard, play hard, like you're crazy, like you're gonna, you know, I was like got into an Ivy League school or whatever, they're like, you're fine. Like, and I was like, yeah, you're right, like kind of just trying to keep it together. And it was just really, really, really painful. And that was hard for me to reconcile too when I finally kind of surrendered, was like, on the outside, things were fine. I was like going to school, I had graduated, but inside it was just, it was a mess. And outside, like there was like tons of stuff. I mean, like on the day I graduated high school, I was like on Xanax and drunk, and I almost fell on the stage, and then I started screaming at my best friend, whose last name is right next to mine, that he like did something or, you know, something like that. And then like we got into this screaming, like under our breaths, like angry fight on the stage. There's all these pictures of us like fighting, and then I almost fell. Like it was just, you know, it was crazy and unmanageable. And anyway, so when I turned 18, I started seeing this therapist. The week I turned 18, I was with all my friends, and I was like, you guys, you know, like, I think I should see, like, a therapist about addiction, because I'm definitely a drug addict. And that's the other thing. Like, I never really had any denial that I was an alcoholic and an addict. I kind of liked it. I liked that kind of, like, I really like to self-destruct. And that's also something that, like, pops during sobriety, is, like, the desire. It's not really the desire to drink. It's the desire to, like, do something that'll hurt me, you know, and, like, it's not so much anymore, but that's kind of what it was. And so I had this like moment where I was like, I think you know, I need to see a therapist just to like teach me how to like do drugs in a normal way. And so I started seeing this therapist, and I'd seen you know, my parents sent me to tons of people, but I was always under 18, so I couldn't be honest because I knew they'd send me away in a second. And I would like do drugs in the bathroom there, and like my friend would always wait for me outside doing like it was just like, you know, they used to tell my mom that I was a pathological liar. And then I would convince my parents that the doctors were crazy and all this stuff. So I started seeing this guy, Jim, and he, I didn't know, had like 22 years sober. And he's like this old, cute man, and he would like sit with his like knees up on the couch. And he didn't tell me he was sober, but he kind of started saying, and like from the moment I started seeing him, I wanted to be honest because I was 18 and like I could be honest. He didn't know my parents. My parents didn't know I was seeing him, but he also had this kind of this AA thing that I couldn't identify then, but automatically like I knew he wasn't judging me, and I knew I could be honest with him. And you know, I would tell him things and he wouldn't be like, you're gonna die. Like he would be like, wow, like, you know, I've done some stuff like that. Like, are you, you know, how do you feel? Like, are you okay with what you're doing? You know, like it was just very AA. And he would tell me all the slogans or like lines from the Big Book without telling me that it was AA stuff. So I thought he was this like genius who just like knew my mind, you know. I was like, dude, like what the, like you're in my brain. Like, and I'd always be high at his office, you know, I'd be like, you're genius. Like, and when I got sober and I realized that it wasn't him, that it was like AA, I got so resentful. I like called him and I was like, you like made me think you were this like. And he was like, I was just carrying the message. Anyway, so he kind of started inserting this idea that there was another way to live, and like a happy way to live. Because I knew about rehab. I kind of knew about AA a little, but in my idea it was like I would sit home and watch like 6 Feet Under for the rest of my life and with my parents and eat cookies. You know what I mean? Like it didn't occur to me that there was like life past using. And so he kind of like inserted these ideas, and he also talked a lot about dying and about like that this is a deadly disease and a fatal disease, and that really hit home because by that time I was mixing a lot of stuff and a lot of it, and all these celebrities, it sounds so silly now, but all these celebrities started passing away, and it was in like the span of like a year. It was like Heath Ledger, Anna Nicole Smith, like all these, Michael Jackson, all these people, and I would like be buying cigarettes, and on the cover of the Post or something, it would say what the pills they were on, and it was literally like a normal night for me. Add like 4 grams of coke and alcohol, you know, like it, and I would look at these things and I'd be like, shit, like that's real. And I didn't really care that much about my life in that, like, I was just miserable. But I have a younger brother, and he's like the most important person in my life, and we were always really, really close. And I used to like, you know, I'd be like, don't do drugs, like they're really bad. And then inevitably he started doing drugs a lot with my friends, and then we would smoke pot a lot together. And like I would, you know, like towards the end, I remember one night, which I always tell the story just cause it's like, it hits home for me a lot. I was at my house with him and his girlfriend, and we were smoking pot, and I was like having such a good time, and I was like, you know, this is so chill, like we're just hanging out, this is awesome. And I was like, you know, don't let me go out tonight, because if I go out, I know I'll do drugs and or like, you know, coke or whatever. And I really don't want to. I'm having a really good time. And they're like, okay, like, we won't let you go out. You know, like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Just stay home. And I was like, okay. And a couple hours later, I got like one text from this guy. And it was like, what are you doing or something? You know what I mean? Just one text. And it was, and I knew that the place he was, it was this like loft in Brooklyn, and it was like my like drug den. And I read the text and I like put the phone down, and then slowly it's like beyond my control, I started like getting dressed and like putting on, you know, and my brother's like, what are you doing? Are you going out? And I'm like, no, I'm not going out. Yeah. And I'm like putting on clothes, and then I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't want to go out. So I like sit back down. Then like 5 minutes later, I'm like getting up again and like rustling and getting my bag, and like I like while my body was doing this, I was speaking and being like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't want to go out. Like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm not, you know. And inevitably, like, I left, and I remember, like, it was just, I kept like changing my mind on the way there and like turning the cab around and then like getting off the FDR and then getting on the train and then getting off the FDR. Like, it was like a mess. And then I ended up going, and I remember being on the way there and being like, this is insane. Like, this isn't me. Like, something is pulling me here. I don't want to do this. Like, I'm not choosing to do this right now. And it was like complete and utter powerlessness. Like, and it wasn't, it was just so clear to me at that point. Of course, I didn't get sober yet, but it was probably like a year before I got sober. But it was just, and that's how it was. But towards the end, it was just like constantly doing things I didn't want to do. And then the pills like were really bad, and I thought people were stealing my pills. So on my BlackBerry, on like the notepads, I called it accounting was the title, and I would write what I took and how much I took and the time every night. And it would be like, you know, like half an Ambien at like 11:20, and then it would be like the other half at 11:35, and then it would be like half a Xanax at like 11:52, and this would continue until like 10 in the morning or the next day or whatever. And I'd wake up and I'd look at this and I'd be like, oh my God. And I would like, when I was out at night, I'm very like anxious and OCD, and I would Google like Ambien plus Xanax plus cocaine, and it would be like death, you know? And I'd be like, okay, so I'll only take half now and like half later. And I would constantly like ask the people I'm with, I'd be like, is this bad? Like, am I going to die if I like do this? And they'd be like, yeah, it's probably really bad. And I'd be like, okay. And then I'd like take it anyway, you know, like, so yeah, it just was really unmanageable. Anyway, so the last night I drank, I had graduated high school, and I was supposed to go to this school upstate, and I had gotten a single, and I had made absolutely no plans to go to this school. I think part of me knew that if I went, I would die, which I would have. And I had this image of me like alone in this room with like snow outside and like all dark with like a lamp and like lines. And like, I was like, oh my God, like what if I can't smoke cigarettes in my room? Like, it's going to be so dramatic. I'm going to have to go downstairs all the time. And then if I do smoke and then the person comes, they're going to find the drugs. And it was just like, I was so like wrapped up in this shit. And I remember my mom being like, shouldn't you like buy sheets or something? And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, figure it out. And so I was supposed to go to this school, and I went on vacation with my parents to Paris to see family, and all my friends were there going on a Euro trip or whatever, and we hung out. The last night I drank, it was like me and my parents and some friends, and my parents, like, we bought this bottle of absinthe, and we were drinking, and my dad found like some of his pot from the 80s or whatever, and we were like smoking, and he took us, you know, my parents took us to like a lounge where we drank, and then a bar where we drank, and then a restaurant where we drank, and then a club where we drank more. And it was just like a very long drinking night. And then we got back to the apartment, and I had some pills that I had taken from the States, and I like gave them to everyone, and I didn't have any coke. And I started hysterically crying. I don't really remember it that well, but what I gather from other people is I started hysterically crying and yelling at everyone, telling them that they're using me for my pills and that they hate me and that they're all assholes, and because like all this shit happened, obviously, which you can assume, and was just yelling at everyone or whatever. My dad came in, it turned into the shit show fight, and I ended up by the river with my brother and drinking this like broken bottle of absinthe, and I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. I think I'm going to die, and I don't think I can not do coke. If I drink, and I don't think I can not drink. Like, I don't think that's an option. And my brother was like, well, why don't you go to rehab? And I was like, I think that's kind of a good idea, because everyone else had always been like, you're fine, but this is my younger brother. And he wasn't like, you're fine. He was like, you're a mess. And so I went back upstairs, and my mom woke up, and I immediately, I think part of me knew that I would regret it the next day, so I told her, like, everything. I was like, I have been doing this and this, like, I tried heroin, like, I'm gonna die, like, all this crazy stuff. And she was like, finally, like, okay, you're gonna go to rehab. So the next day I woke up and, like, totally regretted it and was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean what I said. And my dad was like, yeah, she was just dramatic. It's fine. She doesn't have to go anywhere. And my mom was like, see, was just like, oh, okay. And, like, walked out of the room, called my therapist, who at that point she knew, and I put me on the phone with him. And he basically convinced me to go to rehab. So I, like, went straight to rehab the next day. And I had my last drunk on the plane, where I took all the rest of the pills I had, started hysterically crying in these huge sunglasses, talking about how this is the end and la la. And we got delayed on the ground. So I, like, called all my friends and was, like, crying and screaming about going to rehab. And this guy was sitting next to me, like, looking at me. And then the flight attendant was like, I can't give you any more wine. We haven't taken off and you've drank, like, over a bottle and a half of wine. And I was like, I'm going to rehab. Like, it was just, I was, like, very dramatic. Anyway, and then I got to rehab. And it's, like, super hazy, obviously, because, like, hadn't slept in 5 years, but it, I was so, like, I saw the steps on the wall, and we had the NA book there, and I was reading some of it, and it was, like, I just, like, exhaled for the first time. Like, it was, like, I could finally kind of, I just had a feeling like I was in the right place, and, like, everything would be okay. And I remember I saw the word powerless, and I was, like, oh, like, that's the word that I've been looking for. Like, it rang very true to me. And then I remember, like, one of the first days we were there, we talked about the third step, and, like, the concept that I didn't have to run my life, no one had ever said that to me before, introduced that idea. Like, my mom, my dad, like, it's very, like, run your shit, man. And, like, that, I never even entertained the possibility that, like, if I stopped controlling things, like, life would go on, you know? Like, that never occurred to me. And I was just... it was wonderful. I mean, I couldn't, like, do it right away, but just the idea that, like, something else, that I could rely on something else and that I would be taken care of and, like, be okay, just made everything much better. And so after 30 days, I was, like, I was also, like, Little Miss Rehab. I, like, loved rehab. I was, you know, my parents almost picked me up, like, every weekend. I'd call them and be like, pick me up. They'd be like, okay. And then, like, I'd call them and be like, never mind. And but I really liked it. Like, I really wanted to be sober, and I wanted to come back to New York and go to meetings and all this stuff. And after 30 days, they were like, we think you should stay longer. And I was like, fuck that. Like, get me out of here. And my parents were like, it's your choice. We're not going to make you do anything you don't want to do. And I was, like, hysterically crying. And it was also the day before I was supposed to go to college. So I was still going to go to college. And it was, like, the choice of staying in rehab and deferring for a year or going to this place that had been, like, my dream for, like, whatever reasons. And my brother was in the room, and he just, like, looked at me with tears in his eyes and was like, just stay. And, like, it's so corny, but it was, like, the most emotional thing that's ever, you know, and I was like, okay, I'll stay. And so I stayed. And, like, 2 weeks later, I had, like, the worst craving for drugs that I've ever had. So, like, thank God I was there. And basically what they said was, like, New York is just too much of a trigger right now for you. Just stay. Like, it's not, you know, if you can, just do it. So anyway, so I got back, and I did everything. I don't know how I just spoke about my using for that long. I came back, and I just did everything everyone told me to do. And I went to more than a 90 and 90. I went to, like, two meetings a day. I got a sponsor right away. I started doing the steps. I love the steps. I think meetings are great, and I think fellowship is great, but I think for me, the steps is what enabled me to actually live a happy, sober life, not just that kind of fleeting, like, oh, I'm in a meeting, I feel great, and then, like, the rest of the day, you're just, like, in alcoholism, or that's what it was for me. And the steps really help with that. And, you know, since I had 4 years last month, and the only way... Not me. But, like, the point is, like, I didn't do anything. Like, I just showed up and did what you guys told me to do. And, you know, like, for me, today, like, I can very much identify alcoholism in my life and, like, as, like, a mind disease. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the drinking. It was before the drinking, and it's after the drinking. The drink was a symptom that became the problem, and now it's stopped. But, like, there's still so many problems for my alcoholism. You know what I mean? It can manifest in so many ways, and, like, cigarettes and sugar and boys and whatever. Like, it's, you know, it's there. And if I'm not treating it, like, it's there. and it's still going to make my life unmanageable. And I'm still, you know, I go to one of my home groups is this meeting that focuses really heavily on the mind and on alcoholism as like a disease and the day you're in and as like alive and well and like in a sober person. And we talk a lot about like the thought patterns that many of us share. And for me, like that's what I deal with today is like walking in this room, like there's like, you know, this like freaking things on like repeat in my head that's like, oh my God, like everyone's looking at me, everyone's judging, which is so self-centered because half of you weren't even listening, the other half are texting, like it really doesn't matter, you know what I mean? Like, but like in my mind it's like they're all judging me, they're all looking at me like, oh my God, like blah, 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 like and it's just, it's constant, that's kind of what I deal with today. And yeah, so like steps, awesome. I also, for me, which I'll end with, is the greatest gift for me in sobriety today is not like, you know, I have great relationships with my parents, with my friends. I'm actually like kind of okay with who I am as a person and like have a little self-worth, which is like crazy. But also it's like I have this fundamental belief that that like I'm okay and that I'm taken care of and that no matter what happens, like it's fine and that the world is like exactly the way it's supposed to be right now and everything else is like what I'm projecting onto it and like what my mind is telling me. And you know, that's like higher power stuff, you know, just that like I know I'm taken care of and that I'm not running shit. And when I try to run shit, it's like a joke. Like yesterday, I like planned my whole day like super by the hour and like nothing went as planned. It went better than I could have imagined it, like because it had nothing to do with me. So yeah, that's all. But thank you guys so much. I hope I said something that helped someone. And yeah, that's all. Thanks, guys.